Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, college hoops writer for Sporting News, studio analyst at Big Ten Network, it is Mike DeCourcy. And Mike's been coming on our show. We've been doing the show now, entering our 22nd year. I think he was on when we were a weekend show.
Yeah, from the beginning.
Thank you, Mike.
You're from the beginning.
We appreciate that.
How are you, buddy?
I was on when you guys were real juveniles and not just acting juveniles.
Right. Yes. Exactly.
That's a very good point.
That's been our staple. We've continued to do it for two decades.
Yeah, we've said over the years this show thrives on stupidity, and it hasn't really changed over 20-plus years.
Mike, you probably can't believe we're still on the air after 22 years.
Oh, I think it's an impressive achievement, absolutely.
Hey, so what are you doing up so early? Do you live in Chicago?
No, I live in Indianapolis.
Okay.
I am on my way to New York City for the Big Ten tournament.
Gotcha. This
is your time right now.
That's right. What do you think about that? They obviously wanted to play it in New York, so they had to do it a week early because Big East is there, and so they crammed all these games in. I think their first conference games were probably early December. But man, this is weird to have the Big Ten tournament so early.
It is odd. I will certainly grant you that. But I will say this, the price of doing this was the occasional schedule compression for various teams, too many games in too few days. But I found it interesting that only, Monday night, Mike Krzyzewski was saying, look how many games we had in so few days. And he doesn't play in the Big Ten, so apparently it's not only them.
Right. Do you think they'll do it again?
No. I'm not saying they will never go back to New York, but I don't think that will happen in the near term. I think they needed to reach out to the eastern portion of their conference.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting how territorial some of the Midwestern Big Ten fans got about this move. And last year's down to D.C. at the Verizon Center, they feel like this is their tournament and they're only allowing Maryland and Penn State and Rutgers to play in it out of the goodness of their heart. Well, those three schools are all, full-fledged members. They were asked to join and made significant alterations to their athletic histories and traditions to become Big Ten members. So, for them to have this tournament near to them a couple of times doesn't seem to be that great a cost to pay for the league at large.
Yeah. Here's another kind of strange fact. Let's just say a team like Michigan would lose their first round game tomorrow because they would play the winner of Iowa, Illinois. All right. So that's March 1st, correct? Yeah. So let's just say Michigan to lose that game. Michigan's going to the tournament, obviously. They might have to wait 16 or 17 days before they play their first round tournament game. That's a huge layoff this time of year. I mean, it could be good for them, too.
It would probably be a record because even the Big South champion or the Ohio Valley champion, traditionally those leagues have decided their championship on the earliest day, and that's always been the Saturday a week ahead of Selection Sunday. So that's 8 days before Selection Sunday and maybe 12 to 13 before their first game would be. That this would be even a few days beyond that. So that would certainly not be the best case scenario for Michigan. But honestly, it's quite possible that one of the Big Ten's four lock teams mm-hmm. could lose on Friday's quarterfinals, and it'd still be a longer layoff than what those leagues I talked about before have experienced. But I will say that I just don't see how that's necessarily a bad thing at this point.
Right.
Teams have made the Final Four Wichita with a day long, you know, with the Missouri Valley has always been on the Sunday in advance of Selection Sunday. They made the Final Four in 2013. Butler and Gonzaga have made the Final Four with the championships decided on the Tuesday before Selection Sunday. So we've seen teams have great success in the NCAAs recently with very long layoffs in advance of their first game.
Talking College Hoops with Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, also a studio analyst at the Big Ten Network. So the last couple of weeks, there's been a lot of discussion about the NCAA. You have the corruption case going on. You have players like LeBron James chiming in. Do you feel that we're closing in on a tipping point, that things might change with the one-and-done rule and players being paid possibly, that sort of thing?
I don't think that players will be paid per se at any time soon, probably not for a very long time, but it's not to say they may not be allowed to make money. I don't think that the NCAA can sustain the effort to keep agents out of their neighborhood, so to speak, any longer. They've lost the war. It's over. Mm-hmm. And they lost badly. I mean, and they were beaten a long time ago, but now it's a complete rout. You know, it's quite clear that it's everywhere, and they can't continue to hold that off. So they have to make a change there. You know, it's interesting that you bring up the one and done rule. The falsehoods and the misinformation about the age limit rule are just. It's among the most unbelievable things I've seen in 35 years of sports journalism. I mean, there are so many lies told about that rule. There is so much misinformation about it. It's so misunderstood. The reality is the college athletics, college basketball circumstance is today much more a product of the rookie salary cap than it is the age limit. Much more. The rookie salary cap has gone on for 20 years. It's the single worst rule the NBA ever passed. It's been bad for all levels of the game, and yet no one has decried that one thousandth of a percent as much as the age limit rule. The age limit rule has been fantastic for all levels of basketball. It's been really good for college to have guys like Anthony Davis and Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal and John Wall there in D.C. now. Play college basketball. It's been unbelievable for the NBA. 10 years ago, 11 years ago, when this thing started, the most valuable NBA team was worth $550 million. It's now worth over $3 billion. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a coincidence. It's partly a product of the NCAA continuing to mint stars for the NBA, and in exchange for doing that, for training and minting stars, what does the NCAA get? It gets bashed around by a coach and the biggest star in the league. It's ridiculous.
Well, hold on. I want you to explain more why the rookie cap has been so bad. I haven't thought about it, so explain it to me.
Okay. So in 1994, Glenn Robinson left.
Sure. Got $100 million, and I remember all that.
He didn't get $100. He asked for $100. He got about $60 and change.
Right.
And in today's dollars, it's like $115 million-ish.
Right.
In today's dollars, okay? So now the top rookie leaves college and gets, I believe, over the first 2 years, somewhere on the neighborhood of
what, 10 12 million or
to
something?
14,
yeah,
I think.
Right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Maybe 20 top.
Right.
I mean, it's a fraction.
Right.
of what they got then. And they get now a 2-year guarantee.
Right.
They used to get 4 when they first, they've even made the rookie cap feel worse for the rookies. And so what happened is back then guys like, hey, if I get to be one, like Big Dog or like, C Webb or whoever, I get really paid. I mean, so I better be ready to be number one, and I better be ready when I get in the league to make it work. And so what do we get? We got Penny Hardaway and Jason Kidd and C-Webb and, mm-hmm. and Shaq and all these guys who played multiple college seasons, and they entered the league as major stars and as ready to play, and they became great players at the NBA very rapidly, and they dumped that for in exchange for cost certainty and for cost limitation.
Right.
And so now you get actually in the first year of the rookie cap, you had Kevin Garnett go into the NBA, and then you had the parade of guys who did that. And high school guys were not as successful of players as the one-and-done guys have been.
Yeah, but why is that a product of the rules? Is that because they're just trying to get the clock started, get there before?
Yeah, trying to get the clock started. There's no value or little value in being as well-trained as was the case when there's not that great a disparity before. If you were like the ninth pick, you might get $8 million or less, as opposed to the 60 or 50 or 40 that you'd get for being one or two or three. So there was a huge disparity there. Now you're one, you're 10, you're 15, you're 20. It's not that big a difference. Mm-hmm. So guys just go when they think they can get picked.
So what can the NCAA do about the kids who have no intention of playing their sophomore years?
Well, I don't think that, first of all, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, if you're going there to get better, to better your station in life, I don't think there's any problem with it. The rules as they're written now, APR, things like that, they certainly punish the schools if the players don't complete their year. If you only go one semester and do the Ben Simmons thing, that's an LSU issue. They should not have allowed him to get away with that, and they did. But other schools aren't allowing that. Kentucky has had 22, I believe, 20 or 21 or 22 one-and-done players under Calipari. 20 or only one guy in all that time has failed to complete his first full season, first full academic year, I should say. So it's again more misinformation spread around by people who have big microphones. Bob Knight used to say that it was never true. It's not that it's never been true of particular players, but the general practice has been no. Those guys are finishing their full year. They're as committed to that as anyone else. You know, no one yells at Harvard because Bill Gates didn't finish his career, or Texas because Michael Bell checked out after a couple of years. I told a story that I heard on SiriusXM one time. Josh Groban went to Carnegie Mellon to major in musical theater. He didn't even last. I don't think he even completed his first semester because someone offered him a record deal.
Right.
I mean, it's just the way it is.
Well, no. Well, Mike, I was asking because I'm not saying they're not finishing their academic year. I'm saying they have no intention of playing their sophomore year. So those are the kids that are most vulnerable. No, there's nothing. But those are the kids that are most vulnerable to the agents.
Well, that's another thing. The idea that this agency deal is a one and done thing. Look at the list of players. There are multiple players on that list who are alleged to have accepted loans in the thousands of dollars, who were multi-year college players who were not even first-round picks, who became second-rounders. There's one who accepted a smaller sum, allegedly, who was an undrafted free agent who played 4 years in college. So it's not just one-and-done guys. If you eliminate one-and-done, you do not solve any of this problem.
All right, so real quick, you mentioned the Big Ten. You say four lock teams, Michigan State, Purdue, Ohio State, and Michigan. Nebraska's actually got the double bye, 13 conference wins, nothing real sexy about their resume. Do you think that Tim Miles and the boys have a shot at an at-large?
They have a shot. They have to, at the very least, win on Friday in the quarterfinals. I don't think they can get in without another win. And without another quality win, which they most likely would get on Friday, presuming it's Michigan that gets out of the initial game. So they have to win that. And if they play Michigan State on Saturday, I think they at least have to give a good accounting of themselves. But I do think it's a win, then you're probably in situation, and a lose. If you lose close, then you're sitting there just sort of hoping for everybody else to lose a million games, and there's only so many games left. I mean, UCLA has one game left prior to the Pac-12 tournament. I think some of the other bubble teams might have. We're pretty much down to one on almost all of them.
Right.
So they just had bad luck. They had a couple of opportunities on the road at Creighton, close but didn't get it done. Home Kansas, very close, didn't get it done. And then the schedules did break for them. They had one place with all those lock teams I talked about, and only one of those games against the other Big Ten top teams was at home. So just not a lot of good fortune in that.
All right, go grab that flight to New York. Safe travels, man. We'll be watching.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate
it. Always a pleasure.
Yep. Thanks. All right, buddy. Thanks, Mike.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We all have teenage kids. A couple of us have multiple teenage kids. Jason has a couple kids in high school. My daughter's a senior in high school.
I can't believe
Eric's got two kids in high school.
Yes, sir.
Just step back and think about that. Your kid, your daughter will be in college next year.
Yeah.
I mean, it blows me away.
Please.
Cake's going to be a junior. Cake's going to be a grandpa in a couple
of
years.
Fossil.
I know, you are.
This kid's going to be in grad school soon.
Three
or four years from now, Cake's, you know, because like if you're, Cake's had kids pretty, at a kind of a younger-ish age, right?
Correct.
And usually the kids do, they kind of do what your parents do. So Cake's going to be a grandpa in like 3 or 4 years.
Three or 4 years would be a show.
I kind of sleep on Cake's because he's had older kids. He's had older kids, obviously.
The whole time.
And his kid's been in college for a few years.
He's going to turn 21 in like a month
and
a half.
When I think about, you know, Kelsey, JP's daughter, I think about Stevie, I think about my oldest daughter, Maddie. I mean, they're going to be in college. Well, his is going to be in college next year. And then Stevie and Maddie will be in college in the year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just blows me away when I ponder that.
Bunch of empty nesters sitting around here.
And I'm not going to be an empty nester for a long time.
Can I tell you what that's true?
And can I tell you how it makes me feel? It makes me feel pissed.
Why?
Because I don't want it to happen.
And you can't fight it. You just gotta embrace it.
You can't
drink it in.
Obviously.
You just gotta drink it in.
The passing of time is the most depressing thing in life.
Well, it is depressing.
Yeah. Just the passing of time.
I'm with you. But what I find hard is the transition where you have to let them, like,
Let them fly.
You got to let them fly.
And that's going to be so hard. It's going to be so hard.
You have to do it now.
Well, I get it, but that's another stage.
Yeah.
When they're going away off to college, another state.
So your kids are like in the same stage. EB's kids are spread out a little bit, so they're kind of in different stages.
Mm-hmm.
Especially your youngest is 8.
Yep.
So he's got 8 to like 17.
I can tell you this. My youngest daughter, who's 2 years younger than my oldest, all right, she's 14, she is going to be so distraught when
her sister leaves.
Yeah. I mean, they fight all the time. That's what sisters do. You should see them.
They're best friends still at the end of the day.
Just at each other's throats all the time.
You should see them when they fight about clothes. It's unbelievable. I drink.
I just crack a bottle of Tito.
I'm going to get a drink over clothes. They do it all the time.
What are you going to do?
Every single day. But that's why I drink. I just forget about it. I go upstairs and I just drink.
You're going to be the one that faces the biggest impact because your kids aren't spread out. Like, Cakes' kids are spread out a little bit,
I'm telling you, the effect it's going to have on my youngest daughter is really going to hurt me. It's going to have a huge effect on me, too.
Sure.
Because she won't know what to do without her sister.
Yeah.
Right, but then 2 years later, she's going to be off to college.
I know.
In 4 years,
and then
you're going to be an empty nester.
It's going to be a while for him.
It's going to be a while for Cakes. It's definitely going to be a while for me.
Maybe I'll win the Heisman Trophy, too.
Yeah, but literally, in 3 years or 3.5 years, mm-hmm. it's going to be you and T, and that's it. He's got another 7 or 8 years. Cakes another 5 or 6. I've got 17 more years.
You know what? Maybe I'll adopt a kid in 2 years.
You should.
Or 3 years.
You won't do it. But wanted to bring this
make
up.
Make it a big, strong brother, about 6'3". Yeah,
somebody goes straight
in
to the
grade.
League.
Yeah.
Kid on an AAU team.
Maybe LeBron will put his kid up for adoption. I can just snatch him.
Right. Make it fun.
I think it's safe to say LeBron's kids won't have to fill out financial aid forms.
Probably not.
No, I don't think so.
Those are all a scam. I nothing more maddening than FAFSA forms.
Yes,
I did it once and realized, they're not going to give me any sort of financial break. Not doing it again. Mm. Not doing it more than once.
Kelsey's been offered money from a couple schools, but it's a drop in the bucket.
Of course.
It's, of course, the super expensive private schools.
Mm.
Like, yeah, we'll give you $20K, and they're like, okay, that sounds like a lot, $20K.
Well, yeah, I don't want to go into your daughter's thing.
Like $65K.
I know we're going into a different topic here, but JP's daughter also has an ability to go to a very good school here locally, where she, you know, yes. it would be financially of great benefit to the Flame family.
Yeah.
I've told you, I support bribing her.
I'm thinking about it. I'll wait till that point when all the schools come in, because she's still waiting to hear from a couple schools that will tell her in March or April.
I mean, the problem
is decision making is coming.
If your daughter's anything like my kids, they want to do the exact opposite that you want to do. So
yeah,
I would start lobbying for what she wants.
Well, at the one university which you're talking about.
You got to start to use those Jedi mind tricks on your
kids. I actually bumped into somebody who was a professor at that school yesterday. And she was raving about the exclusive program, which Kelsey got in. And then I told Kelsey yesterday, and she could care not at all.
Yeah,
maybe she'll be won over. Maybe you can bribe her. But I wanted to bring up this story, which Drab put in, which is interesting. And we've had this discussion before, but it's kind of a new angle about the sex talk. Has anybody actually had the sex talk with their kids? I have not.
I had a very condensed version. Don't be stupid.
Right.
Don't
make you a grandpa.
I mean, in a nutshell, don't be stupid. No means no. Don't get anybody pregnant.
How long did it take, and how was his reaction? Did he say, stop, Dad?
Yes, a minute.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you had to cover your base. And
I believe
I've had that version of it a couple times, but it's condensed, 30 seconds. Hey, listen here, stupid. There's a couple things you got to know. You know, and...
Now, my daughter has never.
There's not going to be some big giant sit down at a restaurant or in an office with the door closed for half an hour. The kids don't give you that kind of attention.
My daughter's never had a boyfriend, and she's gone to dances, but she's never even gone with dates. She's gone with groups. I think that's similar to your daughter's.
Right.
So it's not like crisis point, but it's funny. This week I talked to a buddy of ours, and I couldn't believe the detail that he knew about his sons. They're at least talking about what's going on and stuff is going on.
I have buddies who have told me what their kids are into, and it would be like Valdez like AWOD telling me something. You know what I mean?
Right.
I was like, well, I don't want to know those details about my kids.
Right. But some people want to know, because
some parents know
they figure,
everything that their kids are doing.
I don't need to know all the gory details. They figure the more information than they know, they can prevent things. So this particular father basically said, whatever you do, do not make me a grandpa, essentially.
Right.
He's like, because that'll ruin your life. You're a teenager. You cannot get
somebody
pregnant.
It'll ruin
your life.
Maybe I'm stupid. I don't overemphasize that point, because I would think that our kids know so much better.
Told, I mean, it depends on your school system, the county you're in, whatever. There is sex ed in school, but the different angle here that this story coming from the New York Post is that a mom and dad, I guess, don't feel comfortable enough to talk to their kids about sex, that they put out an ad to try and have an expert come in. And they apparently were willing to pay the right candidate nearly $3,500 to have the talk.
I'll do it.
With their children.
I'll knock out the talk in a minute.
Pay me $3,500.
Yeah, I'll just go and I'll steal something from a health teacher and go give the talk.
The talk seems very early in this story for an 8-year-old girl and a 7-year-old boy.
Oh, you're not doing that.
So they were talking not only about sex, but monthlies for girls and being by yourself and like all of those topics.
I reject that. I'm not doing that at 8 and 7. No
I
chance.
Agree. But farming it out? I don't think my parents ever had that talk with me.
First of all, the girl stuff.
Did your parents have a talk with you?
Well, it wouldn't have been my dad. It would have been my mom.
Right.
Dude, it was so long ago. I don't know. Probably something small. I mean, it wasn't a sit-down 2-hour.
But you had a good relationship with your mom, actually. Like, really good relationship.
Yeah.
I think our generation.
I could see your mom doing that.
I'm sure we probably had a discussion or two.
I think our generation didn't really talk about those things.
Probably not.
I don't think so. I can't really remember.
But, you know, these kids are learning so much more in school than we did.
I mean, they know stuff in the fifth grade. Yeah. I'm just saying, as far as, like, getting pregnant, that's another thing that my wife always kind of, you know, kind of pounds. But if you grow up the way our kids have grown up and you get a girl pregnant, you are a complete moron.
You're a big
stupid.
You're
a spectacular moron, and you deserve your fate. I mean, I just can't even imagine. I just can't even imagine.
Yeah, but think about the embarrassment. I'll just say this. Think about the embarrassment the first time you went to buy protection at CVS.
You wanted to make sure nobody saw you. And kids may be embarrassed if they're active that they might not. They might not do that.
I don't know. I don't think these kids are that scared. Kids are doing everything. I don't think they're that scared.
But you're right. You have to be monumentally stupid to
if you get someone pregnant, you'd be raised
or to get pregnant, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can understand in some other area where you don't have good guidance. Good.
I mean, it still happens. Obviously,
it does. It does. But if
some of these kids just don't think about it,
kid might not have experience too. Let's say they're actually having relations and they're trying to protect themselves, but they might put it on wrong. It might break. I mean,
you're getting a little too gory in the details there for me.
Right.
That's extensive details.
It's so
right
weird.
There.
I don't mind talking about that amongst us. Sure. I don't like thinking about that with my kids.
Yeah.
It's just so gross.
You're depressing me even more.
Yeah. Yeah. But your kids, your girls are like, you got them shut in. They don't, you know, they
locked
don't do,
down.
They don't do anything. I mean, you're good.
Yep. You might as well call me Turpin. Cakes, just call me Mr.
Papa
Turpin. Papa Turpin. They are
have
locked.
To check your house there. For chains.
Yep. And that's going to backfire on me because at some point they're going to explode.
Ooh, locked down to a
they're
point.
They're going to break out, man.
But
break
you
out.
Gave your daughter her own car. So
I did.
Can't she bounce out of the house pretty much at will?
I mean, she after softball practice, she's usually in the house unless she's going to go out and get something to eat real quick. But she's usually in the house by, you know, 10 minutes after practice ends.
But the gist
believe
of,
me, if you knew my kids, you wouldn't
kids.
Worry about it.
The gist of the story that you're bringing up, though, is that some parents are choosing to avoid the talk and are willing to go to the extent of paying for someone to have it.
That seems absurd.
That does seem absurd. You can even if you look, I'm not. It's not something I would look forward to. But you got to knock it out in a couple minutes and make your, you know, make a stand, make your point well known that you're serious about it.
And I can't.
But
remember.
You don't have to belabor it.
In the public schools, we have kids in Montgomery County. You do. Cakes does. I want to say health ed or sex ed. It was taught somewhere along the line. It might have been middle school.
Definitely yeah. Middle school. They
middle
start
school.
Hitting on it.
And right. And I remember by middle school.
Because
already,
by they, high school,
they
too
already,
late.
And by middle school, by the way, they already know everything in it.
Of course they do. You think middle schoolers aren't savvy?
It's not like they're all of a sudden going, oh, so that's how you
think 12 and 13-year-olds don't know what's going on in the world.
They know. Believe me, they know what's going on. I see high school kids walking around in Victoria's Secrets.
Yeah.
Victoria's Secrets bags. I mean, they know what's going on.
Right. I thought you were going to...
No, I'm not giving you any specific details of nothing. I'm just telling you.
I'm not going to worry about having the talk with my oldest daughter until she has a boyfriend.
Is that right?
She hasn't even had a kiss yet, so I'm not even going to worry about that.
How do you know, though? She's not going to tell you.
I wouldn't. I mean...
She's going to tell you?
That if she's kissed someone?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll find out. Yeah.
How will you find out?
Well, she'll tell my wife.
She will?
Come
my
on.
Kids, my kids wouldn't tell.
I didn't tell my parents when I kissed Diane at Parrell Park.
Your daughter will. Your daughter will.
So. I mean, yeah. I just didn't tell my parents.
Well, put it this way. When your daughter, your middle kid has a boyfriend, you're going to assume they're kissing. So you don't necessarily have to know.
I don't think I'm necessarily going to know when those seminal moments occur.
But you might not know the day, but you'll know when to have the talk.
We'll see. I think you got to cover it before that, to be honest with you. Because
no,
I don't think you're going to know.
I agree.
When all that stuff's going down.
Yeah, and look.
You got to cover it before.
Cakes once Pearl Park got his first kiss, and it could have quickly gone down a different road. It didn't.
No, it didn't.
It just so happened he had the worst game in country.
Because I was scurred, and I didn't know. I wouldn't have known what I was doing.
But it could have progressed.
Oh, it could have progressed. It was on a silver platter. It was ready to progress, but yeah. I was scurred. I didn't know what to do. I was like 13 years old.
Do you know what to do? Do you know what to do now as a grown man?
I know what
man?
To do now.
Yeah.
Are
you silly now?
I'm now 47.
Are you silly?
I think I'm okay. I think I'm all right. But yes, now I think I'm pretty good.
By the way, we all know. Eric and I know that Diane dumped that.
I think
no last
I think
name.
So.
She was fine. Matter.
Just changed the name.
For 13, I was butt-sized.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was pretty hard.
No, that's not true.
I don't know why you're joining. I'd like to see your first guess.
Ooh. Her name was Rachel.
Yeah.
Lived in Philadelphia.
Really?
Yep. He had to go all the way to Philly.
Yeah, I had to go all the way to Philly.
Yeah, like A-Wan. A-Wan's going to go to Boston. You had to go to Philly.
Well, I didn't have to go to Philly. It was a church group thing. Yeah, believe it or not, I was
church
in a church group.
What? This is shocking.
That's the first time I've heard that.
I was in a church group. Went up to Philadelphia for some church group meeting. Met
How
a girl
old were
named
you?
Rachel.
Yeah.
Probably 15.
15, you got ties.
You were young and naive. I went on church retreats, too, in my teen years, and they were terrible.
Yeah, but you were 13, you said.
Yeah.
I started late. I was a late bloomer.
joining us right now to talk some national spring training. Nationals reporter from Masson. He joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. It's our pal Dan Kolko. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we doing?
Hello, Dan.
Doing great.
Dan, you're enjoying the sun and fun down there in South Florida. We'll be down there in about three weeks or so.
For a couple days,
doing some shows. So it must be nice. Are you a golfer?
I am a golfer. I'm actually not in Florida right now. I'm back up in D.C. We fly back down on Monday for our next broadcast. But
do you find time to play when you're down there?
I'll sneak in, a round or two. Yeah.
Good for you.
See, if you were there every day, I was going to challenge you to ask Bryce Harper about free agency every day.
No, he's not going to do that. He's gotten the message from Bryce, I would assume.
Well, I think everyone who is a reporter who covers the Nationals has gotten the message. I understand where Bryce is coming from on that. It's something that he doesn't want. He knows it's going to remain a topic of conversation in the baseball community, but he doesn't want it to be a distraction, or at least as minimal a distraction as possible throughout the entire season,
right.
Both for himself and for the team. He wants it to be about the 2018 season. He wants it to be about the Nationals and their quest to win a World Series. And, he feels like getting asked about it on a daily basis is not something that's healthy for himself or for the team. And so I kind of understand where he's coming from.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I don't know how it's going to work when you got, opposing media coming in every couple weeks. But, maybe it'll work. Who knows? I hope it does. So many different storylines, Dan. Let's start out with the manager, though. What's the biggest difference that you've noticed so far, or when you were there, or you're guessing, with Dave and Dusty and how sort of the players are responding to him?
Well, what's interesting is, I've covered the team for a handful of years now and been through a handful of managers in that time. And when a new manager is starting in spring training, you never hear players or coaches or people around the organization be like, oh, man, spring training is brutal this year. This guy is terrible. Mm-hmm. I don't know what decision the ownership made or Mike Rizzo made. This was a brutal decision. But that said, everyone seems to really enjoy the vibe down there this year. Davey Martinez is obviously focused on his players getting their work in and making sure that they're as prepared for the start of the season as possible, but he's not going through things the way that you might see in a standard spring training, in that a lot of the eyewash drills where guys, before games started, would need to get there at a certain time and stand around for 5 hours and do, a rundown drill or, this type of drill. And it's really just a waste of time for the most part. It's kind of just going through the motions. A lot of that was kind of trimmed down under Davey Martinez. And he's telling guys, get your work in, do whatever you need to do, and then go home. And during that time when they're getting their work in, they're playing music on the backfields. There, a different player gets to choose the music that's being played each day. It's little things like that that keep a vibe light, that keep guys having fun. And so they're making sure, again, that they're doing what they need to, but it's being done in a fun, light way that keeps players positive. And that word positivity is something that Davey Martinez really believes in and wants to reinforce in his team. Staying upbeat, staying positive, being happy, and just enjoying the work. And he feels like that's something that he picked up in his time around Joe Maddon, and he's instituting it here, and his players seem to really enjoy it.
Now, that's not a direct contrast to Dusty, per se. I mean, Dusty was a pretty upbeat guy, right? Wouldn't you say, or no?
He was. No, Davey and Dusty, I'm going to mix up their names so many times this year, especially because there's already been a Davey as the manager. They're both lighthearted, warm people, but I think Davey has a little bit more just kind of liveliness to things, and there's just a little bit more of a spark around there. And it's not to say that guys weren't enjoying their time under Dusty, but Davey just brings, he's a little younger. He can relate to these guys a little more. And I think that holds some weight with them, and I think they really have you know, it's only been a few weeks now, but I think they really have enjoyed what he's brought to the table, at least in spring training.
All right, so give us the latest, your best guess, what they're sort of whispering behind the scenes on the injury front with the two most prominent guys, looking for the return of Adam Eaton, and then, of course, the microfracture surgery for Daniel Murphy.
Well, with both of them, and this is something that Mike Rizzo has said throughout the entire offseason, is, and I believe both players have said this too, you know, opening day would be fantastic, and both of them still have their eyes set on opening day. But, you know, opening day in the grand scheme of things and the two of them being ready for game number one, really not super important. As long as they're, you know, making good progress and coming along in their recovery. So you don't want to push a guy, make sure that he's there for game one, and then come game seven, he's back on the DL and out for, you know, a month and a half. So both guys are coming along. The Nationals are really trying to slow Adam Eaton down because he's a, you know, go, go, go type of guy. He really wants to be back in there after missing so much time last year. But they're kind of putting the reins on him a little bit and making sure that he progresses slowly. And Daniel Murphy is, I think he fully understands how complex and significant his procedure was, the microfracture procedure. And he is kind of putting the reins on himself a little bit. So I think both guys are still very much targeting opening day. They expect that to be what happens with both Daniel Murphy and Adam Eaton. But again, I don't think they're going to push things and make sure that they're there by opening day and then risk some type of setback that could cost them legitimate time once the season starts.
And you don't have to push Murphy when you have Howie Kendrick, because that's a guy, that's a luxury to have when you have Kendrick, who played really well for them last year. And what, he played 50 games or so and hit almost 300. So if he can sit in there for a few weeks or, you know, whatever, a month until Murph's ready, then, you know, that's perfect for them. That's, and aren't many guys that are as good at the backup position right there than Howie Kendrick.
And then you got Wilmer Defoe as well, who right. played really well in his first, you know, full season as a big leaguer, and he looks absolutely jacked. So does Howie. They both look huge and ready to go. They've come a long way. And then you've got Brian Goodwin, who, you know, if Adam Eaton needs a couple days off to begin the season as he works his way back, or, you know, they just kind of ease him into action, Brian Goodwin showed he can be one heck of a fourth outfielder.
Absolutely.
Last year.
Yep.
So the depth that this Nationals team does have really kind of reinforces that they can take things slowly with both Murphy and Eaton.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned him. I was going to ask you about Goodwin. He had the injury late last year. You say he looks good. What are the prospects for him in terms of making the opening day roster? Do you think that's a possibility? And then talk about Robles. Talk about Goodwin and Robles, because it is a position of depth, the outfield position this year with those two guys.
Yeah, it very much is. And that's why the Nationals got so many questions on not just Robles, not just Juan Soto, but other outfielders throughout the offseason when they were talking trades with various teams. This is a significant position of depth for this Nationals organization. I would say that Brian Goodwin has the leg up for the fourth outfielder spot just because he's experienced. He's shown he can handle really any position in the outfield whenever someone needs to take a day off. And the Nationals want Victor Robles playing every day, and that's not going to happen at the major league level unless there's an injury of some kind. So if everyone is healthy, if Eaton's ready to go to begin the season, I think what you see is Victor Robles playing every day at AAA and Brian Goodwin slotted in as the fourth outfielder where he can, you know, help any of those guys, give them a breath on a given day. And you let Victor Robles figure it out. He came a long way last year, and Mike Rizzo still wants to see progression and development from him. He's still very young. So you put him out there at Syracuse, you let him continue to learn the ropes, and then whenever you need him, whether it's June, whether it's August, whether it's, you know, the postseason, like he was last year, you give him a shot, and we're going to watch this kid go.
One of the better stories of last year, I thought, was just the sort of, I don't know, the return or whatever of Michael A. Taylor, right? The resurgence of him, and wow, this is what this kid can do. We all hoped he could do. Have we seen enough that we can now take a deep breath and say, okay, he's going to do this for us every year, or do we still need to see a little more?
Well, there were a few times prior to last year where Michael was given an opportunity and just didn't really capitalize on it the way that he would probably hope that right. he did. Last year came out in a big way, and it really was his coming out party, both you know, within this Nationals club and around the league. People really took notice of what Michael did, and he's had that ability for so long. People knew what he was capable of, and he showed it. I think, you know, he feels very confident that he can put up a year that he did last year, if not improve upon that. Now, that will that happen? We'll have to see. You know, the thing about a guy who explodes in one season the way that Michael did is you kind of do need to sit back and watch and see if he can put it up again. But the Nationals truly believe that last year was the Michael A. Taylor that they're going to get going forward, and that really has been there all along. And I think one thing that I talked to a couple people about last year that really stuck with me is, you know, we're used to seeing top prospects come up and make an impact right away. Mm-hmm. With all the hype on top 100 prospects, and, you know, we know about these guys from the day they're drafted. We all expect these young players to immediately get it, and that's not how it works with everyone. Everyone progresses on a different time frame, and it takes some of these guys a few years to really figure it out and to settle into who they are and what works for them, and on the biggest stage with the most talented players in the world, have some success. And with Michael, it took a few years, but he really did have an enormous 2017, carried it into the postseason, which I think was big for him,
yeah.
and for people to see that, you know, the stage wasn't too big for him. Yeah. And I think he's going to have a big 2018. I think he believes the same, and so do his bosses and his new manager.
I was telling the boys, I was getting all excited reading Boz's article about Kevin Long and the new hitting coach that they brought over. I don't know if it was most recently with the Mets.
Yeah.
I think he was.
You're getting all steamed up
formerly
for him.
With the Yankees, and just his approach and how Bryce is excited for him, and sort of his I guess his sort of dedication to analytics as a hitting coach. And I don't know. This could be like a real significant thing here, sort of in the background.
He could end up being, and I believe this was the premise of Boz's column. I didn't have a chance to read it, but he could end up being one of the biggest free agent acquisitions the Nationals made this winter, Kevin Long.
He's that good.
He's been. I've heard players rave about him for years now, and it's not just Daniel Murphy. Back to when he was with the Mets and prior to that, the Yankees, just his ability to relate to players. Everyone loves him as a person. I remember talking to Joe Dillon, the Nationals now assistant hitting coach at Winterfest, and he said, if you spend a minute with Kevin Long talking to him and come out of that conversation and don't love the guy, there's something wrong with you. So his just people skills, his way of interacting with the people that he's around, and then his ability to take the immense knowledge that he has about hitting and turn it into relatable tips that his players can adapt and use to their advantage. And obviously Daniel Murphy is the prime example of how he took a good hitter, you know, a guy who hit for average, who slapped the ball the other way, who was a bit of a pesky hitter, to a guy who was looking to pull everything, put the ball in the air and hit, you know, 30 home runs a season and became an MVP candidate in Daniel Murphy. So it's that ability to flip a switch on a guy and give him a couple tips that, you know, maybe he hasn't thought about the game in that way before that can really make a big difference. And Kevin Long has already targeted Matt Wieters as someone who he thinks can really benefit from what he's bringing to the table, not in a selfish way, but he's seen some early work with Matt Wieters that he thinks Wieters could be in line for a big bounce back year. And there's other guys as well. It'll be interesting to see what he does with Trey Turner, who has, you know, a good amount of sneaky pop. So, yeah, that'll definitely be a storyline to follow throughout the 2018 season, not just how these hitters are performing individually on the field, but how what Kevin Long has brought to them is helping them reach whatever levels they are.
Dan, we failed to congratulate you for winning the Daytona 500. Props.
Yeah.
Your doppelganger.
Thank you.
Brought it home.
That was very exciting for me. I put in a lot of work this offseason. People think that once baseball ends, you know, I'm just laying around doing nothing. No, I was on the track, man. I was working hard.
Those drives are athletes, too, man. Don't let them tell you differently.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah, Austin Dillon, I'd never really, I'm not a huge NASCAR fan, but people had been telling me for a year or two that I looked like him, and I saw an image after he won the Daytona 500, and I was like, yeah, I got to see it now. I got to see it.
Well, congrats, brother.
All right, man.
Thanks, man. Yeah, appreciate your guys' support this whole time.
Of course. He joined us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. We just tweeted
we'll see you soon.
A side-by-side of the two, and they do look very similar.
Later,
you can go to @JunksRadio if you put them both with the beard, because Dan sometimes doesn't have the beard.
Yeah.
I think when Austin Dillon won the Daytona 500, he had the beard.
Sure.
They look very similar.
Now, his beard isn't Sean Kelly-level beard, but it's he's got a long way to go to catch.
Nice and groomed.
What
like
is Kelly Grant. Doing with his beard this year?
He's trying to make it look like Jason Wirtz.
Oh, it is that bad?
Oh, yeah, it's big. It
looks
big
like a wolf man.
Yeah, he's doing it big.
Real big.
I like it. I don't have a problem with it.
Now, these are so pushy with that.
Oh, I do want to give a quick shout out
to pushy.
Lido Pizza. All love Lido Pizza. I went there the other night in Trevil, and I had my gift card. But one of the guys there is a big listener, and before I even whipped out the gift card, he came over, and he's like, JP, good to see you again. Let me hook you up. I had like a discounted bill, and I didn't even know what to do. Do you whip out the gift card when he like hooks you?
We're just spoiled. We're just spoiled.
It's ridiculous.
That's all there is to it.
And the pizza's so good over at Lido, so thank you very much. Lido Pizza.
All right, couple quick stories here. This one's hilarious. I don't know, how would you react to this, Jason? In Arizona, a woman had just made a $1.8 million offer on a four-bedroom, 4,100-square-foot home. So, you know, about 1,000 square feet smaller than yours. spread across a 1.3-acre lot until she
pulled out of the deal,
discovering it's passed in the porn industry.
Oh, porn house?
Apparently, the property had been utilized as the set of, ready for this, Cakes? Wifey's World, porn site founded in 1998 and operated, I got to find these people, Kevin and Sandra Otterson were the owners of the home. And
they,
you know,
pulled out.
Pun. They didn't. The woman, Linda Fine, pulled out of her deal.
By the way, it sounds like a $1.8 million offer. That home better have like a lot of like 24-karat gold trimming all over the place. It sounds kind of pricey.
So the question is, would you pull out of a deal if you found out?
She says,
I'd say no.
She says, I just can't make Thanksgiving dinner on counters where a porn star has been lounging around.
Well, you
change the counters.
I'd switch them out,
swap out the key. You got to get some new granite.
Correct.
I assume you would change some things. I don't know that I would change out the counters.
How about you know what you buy?
Clean it.
You buy some Lysol wipes.
I might change them out.
Buy some Lysol wipes. $2.
It wouldn't hurt to redo the kitchen.
I'm sorry. How long ago was it used as the porn
Who knows
house?
For how long? It was registered and founded in 1998. Wifey's World. Can you do some research over there?
No, Drab is a huge Wifey's World fan.
Oh, you're all about it? You know
I know all about her. I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan.
Whoa.
Well, because this is in Scottsdale, and I remember when I lived there, when she bought the house, that it was all over the news because people were freaking out.
Right.
And I've kept tabs on her through the years.
I bet you have.
I would not buy that house. I would walk away.
Why?
Well, you couldn't buy that house.
Because all she's done for the all she's done for the last 15 years is invite men over that are not her husband, and they
unless you're buying a new property. Okay, unless you're buying a new property, any home that you're buying, I'm assuming, has had sexual activity in before.
Not like this.
Yeah, that it's running rampant in that house.
The guys are doing a lot of decorating.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
decorating with
ropes. You know, it's so funny.
A lot of painting.
It's a lot of rope decorating cakes.
So many.
You know what's
those.
Sick is I've seen this chick before.
Of course.
She's not even that attractive.
Now, she was back in the day.
I mean, maybe she had her day.
She got big knockers.
I mean, the knockers are too big.
No likey wifey.
I mean, they're gross. I mean, get out of here.
She gets sized to mix it up.
Apparently
with men who are not her husband.
Right.
So EB gets sized.
So the girl pulled her offer. She's not moving into it. She's not buying it.
Well, 1.8 milli, and then she goes and she Google images, you know, Wifey's World, and you can never live there. Yeah. I mean, you see all of the images of, you know, her house.
Hey, what if you found out, though, your Kensington
all over the
what
wall.
If you found out, EB, though, now post-mortem, that your Kensington home had been the site of 100 videos. Porno Dan lived there before you lived there.
Right. I mean, what am I going to do? I've lived there for 15 years now. I mean
it's a different time.
13 years I've lived there.
Is Porno Dan still in the biz?
I'm not.
I mean, every house you buy, is, unless you're the first owner, has kind of been used as a porn house.
Right. Well, not like this.
Lesser extent.
Not
okay,
like this.
It's lesser extent, but I mean, the bedroom that you're in, people are getting banged out in that room.
Right, except for your house.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying before that.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's every,
unless you're
every
buying
house,
a new property.
Every house has history.
Right.
Well, every hotel
yeah,
room
does.
It's
not totally documented online.
I would rather,
it's not famous for it.
I'd rather move into a porn house than a house where somebody died in the house. That was
a murder house?
Well, certainly
died,
a murder house.
Not murder. I couldn't do that.
Yeah, murder house is completely out of bounds.
Nah,
but like
me.
If you die of natural causes, I can live with that.
Nice house?
Dude. What if it was a silly there? That you really wanted?
Yeah, I'll take it.
Like on the water.
I don't believe in ghosts.
I've told you this story before.
The price is right. I might consider it.
Yeah, you would.
My house wasn't homicide or anything, but the reason why my house became available is because the older gentleman that lived there went out to get the newspaper and he slipped and fell on the ice. And
hit his head.
Had his head and dunked off.
Right, so now you honor him by shooting hoops over his head.
That's right. I do.
Yeah.
I should have laid his ashes over there where I rained threes.
Long ashes to you. Now watch me stroke this jumper.
No, I mean, obviously, it's a horrible story.
Of course it is.
Amy Schumer recently married Chris Fisher, someone she knew for all of 3 weeks before they decided to walk down the aisle.
Can't imagine that's going to last.
I'm not sure if this is her first marriage or not, but she apparently was bragging about her wedding vows, one of them being she promised to continue basically hanging out with Jeff Smoker, even though she
says,
everybody tells me I won't.
Right.
And, you know, I do have one friend.
So she's literally, she married the guy after 3 weeks.
Yes.
Wow.
I do have one friend who's been married a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me the last time his wife hung out with Jeff Smoker was wedding night.
Really?
What?
How about this?
No, hold on.
I think I know who you're talking about.
They're still together. They're still married.
Yes. Happy.
Now.
On some scales.
Well, that tells me that.
That was the last time. That phenomenon exists.
Bait and switch.
That is a bait and switch, though. I think you go to the judge and you could get
Better Business Bureau. You should be able to get an annulment.
You should be able to get some sort of annulment.
Tells me that
recusal on that one.
He's hanging out with Jeff Smoker with somebody else.
I don't believe so.
No.
Oh, I'm telling you that's not the case.
He's not that type of person.
Yeah, I'm telling you he's not the case.
Hmm.
It's a show that happened.
So BJ Sarnoff was invited to his wedding. And since then, he hasn't seen his good old friend, B.J. Searle.
He retired.
Long-lost relative they met like once or twice.
That is a shocking revelation.
I mean, is that unbelievable? That right there.
This person has to say something.
I'm calling shenanigans. I think he's hung out with B.J. Searle since then.
I put it partly on him. He has to say something to her.
I think he gave up.
But what are you going to do?
He gave up.
If your partner's not down, it is a bait and switch, though. It's 100% a bait and switch.
He gave up after a couple years.
So he went to his wife and said,
like, this is ridiculous?
Yeah. I mean, come on now.
He says it's not worth getting divorced over.
And
then his wife said, I'm not doing that. That's hard
I don't know what the response was.
I think the response is, I'm not really in the mood.
Just not
For X amount of years?
Well, no, he doesn't ask anymore.
Yeah. That's a battle he's completely lost.
That's why, fellas, you got to keep asking. You can't, if you quit asking, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm full on suspicious.
Right.
Well, I'm telling you,
I think he's hung out with like BJ Sarnoff at a bar somewhere.
I'm telling you, yeah. I'm just guessing. Yeah.
I mean,
Tell you who it is off air,
I know who. I'm pretty sure I know who you're talking about.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm about 99%.
Do I know this
sure.
person, or is it just you guys?
I'll tell you during the break. Okay. There's no need to.
Yeah, we can't bring it up.
Yeah.
It's too private.
I don't know if they were teammates, but he hung out with Howard Johnson. He was a baseball player, too.
Yeah, I mean, is Howard Johnson allowed or no? Can you throw a guy a bone every once in a while?
Do you think a grown-ass man cares about that? If it like almost
sort of the rotation.
Howard
and
Johnson
almost 50?
He can be kind of silly.
Yeah.
What? Like as a...
I think a
now
precursor.
We're getting into really
I mean, it's
weird
silly.
Like,
you know,
it's a good precursor.
It's a good pregame activity.
It's a good like jumping jacks, like warm up.
Absolutely.
Okay. One jumping jack for 1 second.
I would say I like hanging out with
those jumping jacks for how long?
I can do it for a couple minutes.
Oh my God.
I agree with you, Cakes.
A couple minutes.
Yeah, but really?
No. Sure.
Jason, no, but you're not allowed to discuss. You're not allowed to
discuss. You know what, though, Cakes? You and I ran marathons before. These guys are just sprinters, apparently.
Nobody knows Howard Johnson better than yourself.
Exactly.
So what's the...
It pales.
I mean, I would tend to agree with you, but...
I mean, there was plenty of that going on.
I know
his strengths and weaknesses better than the other manager.
You know how to pitch to him?
Yeah, I know how to pitch to him.
I think I could hang out with Howard Johnson.
Till the end?
Yeah.
To the end of the run?
Yeah.
For the Grand Slam?
No, there's one
and
way.
Inside
if,
the Parker.
If you had... an extra condiment. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if you had some, somebody would have to throw some.
Need some pine tar on the back.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
The hose again.
I don't think so.
Now, what? Again, you guys are going to have an emergency room.
I don't think it's necessary.
All right, I'm done. I'm done.
Not if you coach up the other side.
Dunsky.
I don't know how you could do that.
Audi.
All right, Amazon has bought recently a Shark Tank reject. For $1 billion. Ring, the video doorbell company. You guys have seen these things before.
My buddy just installed one.
Right. Was originally called DoorBot. And it was presented, pitched in front of the Shark Tank guys about 4 years ago. And they all passed on it. He wanted $700K for 10%. Mm. The only one that was remotely interested was Kevin O'Leary, but he wanted all these royalties and everything. Right. He passed on it, and now, 4 years later, he sold his company for $1 billion.
That's unbelievable.
Guy's an American hero. Clap him up.
How awesome is that?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.